Wait.
There we go. Good morning, everyone. I'm convening today's Revenue Committee meeting. We are sorry to be just somewhat delayed. We have a few bills before us, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3188. And Mazin, if you would give us a little information on this bill while Representative Juan goes down, because he will be talking about it.
Good morning, Chair Berger and members of the committee. House Bill 3188 deals primarily with the county segment of the economic development from the lottery. I put in your packet, in your SMS, you would see where the ORS for the distribution of the video lottery revenue to counties. This ORS 461.547 dedicates 2.5% of the video lottery to economic developments in the counties. Now, those amounts are divided to the counties in two different ways. The method would be 10% of equal distribution to every county, and then 90% of the amount would correspond to the percentage of the revenue that is generated from each county. And in the packet, I've put a couple pieces of information. One of them would be the distribution to the counties for the biennium, of the previous biennium, the 07-09, and then what is up to the seventh quarter, I guess, of the current biennium 09-11. Also, the transmission of the amounts of revenue that is going to the counties, going from the state lottery. One thing is to bring your attention to that this account was one of the accounts that House Bill 3199 of the 09 session used as, you remember the word sweep. We kind of took a little bit. We didn't sweep the account. Took slightly, and that's why you would have about the equivalent of about $2 million to comply with the previous one, and with that's from the previous biennium, and $625,000 quarterly that goes to that bill. $127,000 goes to the Oregon Economic Revitalization Team. And you have an amendment also in your front of you, and that's Representative Vaughn's also amended, and he's the main sponsor of this bill as well.
Thank you. Questions of Mazin. Representative Gilser, we're glad you made it.
Thank you. There's slidey mud.
Yeah, I haven't heard.
River Road.
I'm so sorry. Representative Vaughn.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, and colleagues. You know, this is an issue that first came to my attention, believe it or not, when I was...
So you need to identify yourself.
I'm sorry, thank you. Representative Matthew Juan, House District 49. This is an issue that came to my attention the first time, believe it or not, when I was about 10 years old, and I wrote a letter to my then-Representative Glenn Otto asking him to use lottery funds for education. And he politely but firmly sent me a letter back stating that quite clearly the Constitution requires, at that time, of course, that lottery dollars be spent on economic development. And over the years, I've followed this issue closely because of that letter, and as we have changed and altered where lottery revenues go, but of course there still remains a portion of lottery dollars that by constitutional amendment are required to go to economic development. About 1991, according to the information I have, there was an agreement that was struck with regard to some of the lottery games. And the agreement was that the cities and counties would forego their opportunity to tax those activities within their jurisdictions. And in return, a certain percentage of the economic development lottery fund would be sent to the counties. That is what brings me here today. Many of the counties in our state segregate that line item, and the revenue that comes from the lottery goes into a separate accounting fund within the county budget, whereupon they use it for economic development activities in a very clear and transparent manner, and that's great. But not all counties do that. I learned over the last few years as a city councilor in Troutdale that, in fact, Multnomah County doesn't segregate the economic development lottery funds into a separate accounting fund. They are an item of revenue for the general fund. And so it seemed to me that that wasn't the best way to be accountable to the Oregon Constitution, and that wasn't the best way to be accountable to our voters across the state. To put this matter into perspective for you, I have a document here that we'll make available to you that was provided to me by the Department of Administrative Services, which is the lottery distributions by county. Now, in some counties, the amount is as little as $60,000 or $70,000. In others, it ranges as high as $5 million in fiscal year 2009. In fiscal year 2010, the amounts again vary depending on the county and the population and how much they use lottery revenues, but in my county, my home county, it's approximately $4 million that's expected to be sent for lottery economic development revenue shares. House Bill 3188 addresses it in several ways, as staff ably pointed out to you, the most important of which from my perspective is simply the transparency and the notion of good government and establishing trust with the voters. Because once these dollars are segregated into a separate accounting fund, it's very easy to track what happens to them. Anybody can go online, particularly in my county, and take a look at the budget and see the revenue and the expenditures for economic development purposes, and it makes it very clean and easy and clear. There is a couple of flaws in 3188 as currently drafted that I have addressed with the amendment that's before you as well. The first is that the Oregon Lottery weighed in. It seemed to myself and the drafters the easiest place to send a report annually about how the money was used was to the lottery. And they were kind enough to respond very politely and say, you know, the better place is the Department of Administrative Services, where they have a website, which seemed to me to very clearly and plainly accomplish the intention of the bill in the first place. So that is included in the Dash 1 amendment. The second is that several folks from counties across the state also very politely pointed out that they hire an economic development person on their own out of general funds, or maybe there isn't sufficient funds coming from this line item to support the cost of an employee. So what I've done with the Dash 1 amendments is made the hiring of personnel economic development director permissive instead of mandatory, so that those counties that are smaller and receive less funds are not burdened with the obligation to hire an employee where maybe the funds don't justify it, or maybe they're perfectly comfortable using them in other economic development ways with existing employees. So I feel this is an important bill. This is an opportunity for us to be more transparent and have more accountability with the counties and track the use of these funds in the constitutionally permissible way. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Questions for Representative One. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a number of people who have signed up. I think in the interest of time, we'll bring you up in panels, and I'd like to first invite Jim Kite, the mayor of Troutdale, and David Etwell from Columbia Gorge. And why don't we start with you two?
Well, good morning, Chair and committee members. I'm Jim Kite, the mayor of Troutdale, and I'm in support of House Bill 3188. The story begins at an AOC conference where I attended an economic development seminar. The presenter was Lincoln County.
Mr. Mayor, did you mention your name?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed it.
That's all right. I was riveted by the information shared in part because the accomplishments they'd made with such a paucity of funds. They were able to create a revolving loan fund for small business and provide support for the Newport Aquarium, which is a major tourist attraction. What really captured my attention was that the funding came from the Oregon Lottery. Unbeknownst to me, the state legislature, by constitutional amendment, dedicates funds for economic development for each of the Oregon counties. However, when I did some research on my own county, and asked how the resources were being spent, I was told that the funding dedicated to economic development was being deposited in the general fund. I believe that the legislature had it right. It is critical now more than ever that our counties and cities invest in economic development. Our very lifeblood is dependent upon the revenue receipts and income taxes that we receive from our business community. Currently, small businesses are having a very, very difficult time just to stay in business and to expand and add additional employees. How different would our economic picture be if each county had supported their business community? I believe there's a demonstrative reason that Seattle, as an example, enjoys a 20% higher income than the Portland metropolitan area. What that differential means in dollars is that our schools in Multnomah County would have an additional $86.8 million for education if we had parity with Seattle area. If we fail to hold local governments accountable for providing the critical resources and driving force needed for economic vitality, we will continue to decline as economic indicators are already predicting. This legislative body needs to have a mechanism to make sure your intentions and the law are being followed. Thank you.
We'll hold questions till both have spoken.
Good morning, representatives, co-chairs. My name is Dave Eatwell. I'm the Economic Development Director for the West Columbia Gorge Consortium, which serves the cities of Fairview, Wood Village, Troutdale, and Cascade Locks. I come here today and speak in support of House Bill 3188. There are a number of reasons why I believe this bill is good for the economic health of my community and the state of Oregon. Firstly, it's a dedicated fund for the purpose of furthering economic development. It is difficult to protect targeted funds from the general fund monster, even in robust economic environments. But when the economy tanks and budgets present harsh challenges, the cutting knife finds its way to the line item for economic development. While it's true that pulling the spark plugs out of your car's engine greatly decreases your fuel expenditures for the month, it also means that you're not going to be going anywhere in the near future. This results in prolonged stagnation. This dedicated fund demonstrates a firm commitment to the future economic health of our community and gives the private sector the confidence needed to invest in the future. Secondly, to employ a person to manage the monies, Multnomah County is challenged to meet the local needs of densely populated neighborhoods and commercial development, rural areas, and small cities that form the transition zones. Local economic development gets lost in the general fund. Currently, the largest tracts of immediately developable industrial acreage in the West Columbia Gorge Consortium service area are owned by Multnomah County. These are prime tracts with rail line frontage, mass transit service, fiber optic availability, abundant power, and easy access from two freeway interchanges. Yet the county has no staff person whose only priority is the promotion and development of these and other assets. The consortium promotes these properties with no financial support from the county, as we are funded from the participating city's general funds. And due to a lack of sufficient resources, it's very difficult to do these assets justice with the meager funds available through the small cities. The local community would be better served if a dedicated economic development fund could be administered either by a county staff person or a contracted agency to move those assets into the tax base as a developed industrial or commercial site. Thirdly, monies may not be placed in the general fund of the county. This clause ensures that these funds will be preserved with the original intent to develop the economic health of the community. And fourth, shall file a report with the Oregon State Lottery Commission. This annual report will also ensure that the funds are expended to the maximum benefit of the community, though I would hope that in implementation, a more precise set of metrics for success could be applied according to the needs of the local community. You may have noticed the word local has been a repeating motif in my comments. I feel that this is key to the maximum benefit to be extracted from these funds. Every local community has its own culture, history, momentum, set of resources, and needs that form the backbone of a successful plan. These funds should be dispersed locally, according to those plans that have been developed to meet the specific needs of the local community. This lowers the overhead expenses, allows for more flexible and quick response to acute needs, and a more precise distribution of funds for maximum benefit. I thank you for the opportunity to speak today in favor and support for our local communities.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to bring up the rest as a panel. Ann Hannes, you're back here. Andrew Olson. Are there two of you? Multnomah County Commissioner McKeel?
No.
No, just... Okay. And Travis...
Stovall.
Stovall. There we go. Thank you.
Sure.
And you can go in whatever order you choose.
Members of the committee, my name is Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3188. As you've heard, 3188 would require counties to deposit video lottery dollars into a dedicated fund, and it would also require a portion of the money to be used to employ a person to manage that account. Just to kind of give you some context about lottery dollars, basically part of the reason why the reason why counties receive lottery dollars is because there was essentially a deal made between the counties and the state on lottery, because the counties used to have the authority to run their own lottery games. And in recognition with the state that it was probably more efficient than having and probably more profitable than to have lottery games run in every single county and to do it statewide, the state then dedicated video lottery dollars for the counties to use for economic development purposes. And basically, 90% of the dollars that are in that county from the machines that are in that county go to that county, and then 10% are distributed statewide to the other counties. We do have many counties that have dedicated funds or accounts for accountability for keeping track of video lottery dollars that they use for economic development purposes, and they use them in a lot of different ways. There's a very broad definition of economic development that the Attorney General has had, and we have counties that have used it for a specific project to attract tourism or economic development, like Marion County has used it for the Oregon Gardens. Lincoln County has used it as they have attracted NOAA, and also to have capacity on the local level to be able to have people that can work with businesses and attract them. Others have also used it and pulled it for their regional economic development district. So the beauty of it has been it's been flexible and able to be used in a lot of different ways. I'm testifying more on an informational basis because we do have counties that do this in different ways, as I mentioned, in terms of having both dedicated funds. We also have a few counties that have been preferred to be more flexible in how they budget them. However, they do keep track of what they spend on economic development. We really appreciate the Dash 1 amendments that Representative Wand has put forward that would make it permissive in terms of employing someone, in recognition that we have small counties that have, say, just small amounts of video lottery dollars, and having someone would basically consume a lot of those dollars. So I think that's a recognition of the diversity that we have of counties. So appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Andrew Olson, co-chairs member of the committee. I am a policy analyst for Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel. She offers her support of this bill. I have submitted written testimony, so I'll be brief. But obviously, the importance of lottery money to the counties and Multnomah County specifically cannot be overstated. We are right now working in Multnomah County to establish a business advisory council of businesses in East and West Multnomah County to help the county make those educated decisions on how to spend this money. So that's something new that we're forming up out of our office, which is very exciting. And this advisory group will have a direct input into how we spend those dollars. Multnomah County is in its 11th consecutive year of budget cuts. So obviously this is very valuable money. And so obviously the idea of the state directing the counties and how to spend their money is not something we would support. This bill does not do that. There was concern earlier that it was. And if anything, it will make it easier for us to manage this money and spend it more wisely. So Commissioner McKeel urges you to support it with the amendments.
Thank you. Mr. Stovall.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Travis Stovall. I represent East Metro Economic Alliance, which is a organization that includes 60 members. The four cities that exist in East Multnomah County, actually Multnomah County is actually a member also, but then they're surrounded by roughly about 55 businesses that come together to talk about economic development in the region of East Multnomah County. And this organization has come together over the last couple of years to, actually it started about 6 years ago, to really address key economic development issues in East County. A major one is transportation, and one of our members always says good transportation supports good economic development. And that's what, those are some of the key things that we work on. Education and workforce is another key area, and land use. And as we look at some of the challenges that we have, and if you look at East Multnomah County or Multnomah County in general, we are, East County roughly holds the majority of developable lands. And as we look as a state and as a region to remain competitive, both nationally and internationally, we need to support our economic development efforts throughout the state, and this is one key way of doing that. House Bill 3188, while I'm sure you're well aware of the benefits of economic development and the dollars placed towards economic development, Dave Eatwell, one of my colleagues, did a great job, I think, of bringing forth a kind of a visual by turning off one of your cylinders, and yeah, it's going to help us now, but in the future it's really going to hurt us. You know, I'll keep my comments brief, but one of the key things I want to mention about House Bill 3188 is that folks that we have now as commissioners may be completely dedicated to economic development. What I think House Bill 3188 does is encourages not just the folks who are sitting in those seats now, but the folks that are sitting in those seats 5 years and 10 years from now to remain committed to economic development. And by having a dedicated fund that these funds go into, and not dictating where those funds go, but saying these are issued for economic development issues, and they need to remain focused on economic development, I think is the key way to ensure that these dollars will be used today, tomorrow, and well into the future to encourage this economic development. So from East Metro Economic Alliance, we want to put our vote of encouragement behind House Bill 3188 to the committee to ensure that it passes, and that we have the opportunity to continue doing what we're doing in the area of economic development to ensure that we've got the dollars that we need and the tax base we need and the revenue that we need to remain competitive again, both nationally and internationally through education and then workforce development, to ensure that we've got the developable lands and efforts to bring companies to our region that are going to continue to help us become a state that will be enviable throughout this country.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming. Yes. Did you have a question?
Yes, I actually did. Sorry.
You're fine. Representative Benz.
Thank you. I'm not sure if this question is for the three of you or for Mazin, but it's that word economic development sounds so great. But when you go and check to see how the money has been spent, sometimes that which is spent on is a long ways from achieving what you think of when you hear that word. And I guess it's nice to say that we should spend it in this particular fashion, but how do we make sure that which has been spent is actually doing more good than how it might be spent in the general fund? The reason I ask the question is because I've watched economic development over the period of time I've seen the lottery in place, and sometimes I wonder if, in fact, good things are actually happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe I would like to hear, I'm sure all of us like to hear, what it is that this money has done so we get past that, just that real magic phrase, economic development. Because the assumption, of course, is that good things are going to happen. I want to hear some of them that have. And maybe your panel is best suited, or maybe not, to say that. And maybe Mazen could address how this money, how we can check on how this money is actually spent.
Well, from co-chairs and Representative Reed, from our perspective, East Metro Economic Alliance Development, East Metro Economic Alliance, it's an excellent question because we all ask that one question. How do we know we're doing economic development? How do we know we're doing it effectively? Well, we've had the opportunity to identify some key areas where we know that we're woefully behind, you know, our counterparts just in the region alone. One of those areas is transportation. We've got what we call the Columbia Cascade River District, which is everything north of 84 along the Columbia River that has significant developable opportunities. Then we've also got what we call the Springwater Corridor. Again, hundreds of acres that are set aside within the urban growth boundary that doesn't have any adequate transportation to it or currently any infrastructure. So for us to be able to even start with economic development, we've got to do certain things, and one of those things is get transportation to these key areas. For the last 20 to 30 years, I know many of you have probably heard of the Mount Hood Freeway, which didn't happen. One of the key things that we struggle with is getting traffic and freight from I-84 to 26. And for a long time, it's been very difficult to even get the parties in East County to sit at the table and have an ongoing and open discussion to be able to get one of the fundamental issues solved by way of getting transportation to these key areas. And so over the last 3 years, part of these economic development dollars that we get from Multnomah County has allowed us as a business organization in economic development to go to the cities and go to the county and go to Metro and encourage all those parties to come to the table and have a conversation and agree on a single study that they all can stand behind so that we can even begin to start the discussion of once we get transportation, then we can work on infrastructure, and then we can get developments within that area. So as we look at economic development, we've identified some key areas that are essential for us to move forward. And those dollars that we don't get very much, but those dollars that we currently receive have been very fundamental, very essential in making this happen. And so we've identified a few key areas that, you know, we can easily share with you to say this is how we measure our success when it comes to economic development. They're measurable, and we've also had some great successes just this past year. You know, our study in East County went up against five other studies for roughly $650,000 in funding, and we were able to receive that $650,000 based on community support and bringing all those parties together to support economic development. So that's one of the successes that we've seen. And if you've followed that course at all, you could probably tell how getting four cities in Multnomah County and Metro at the table to have a discussion and all agreeing on one study is pretty monumental.
Representative Wan, would you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Representative Benz, a couple of things. Number one, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, how do we know what economic development means, and how do we know if the dollars from the lottery are being properly used? Well, one of the ways that we do that is by reporting it and making sure everyone knows where those dollars are being spent, which isn't done now. So that's the portion of HB 3188 that's important with the reporting requirement. Secondly, if all of the funds are rolled into a general fund, you can't segregate where that dollar goes that was intended for economic development because money's fungible, and so it just gets rolled up into every single activity in the entire county. So that's the second step in this bill, is to segregate the funds so that we can more clearly and easily identify where they're going. And then lastly, under ORS 461.547, these dollars that are sent to the counties are supposed to be used for economic development purposes, but that term is not defined in that section. So one of the things that this bill does as well in Section 1 is it provides that furthering economic development has a specific meaning that is already available under the statute, 461.540. And if you look at my one page, I've summarized the general nature of that definition of furthering economic development. And so that's the third step, which is to make sure that with this bill and with this law change, we have the opportunity to know what that definition is. And then over the years, as we take a look at how the dollars are being spent and making sure that they're under the current definition if we need to make changes, then we have the information available that is critically necessary to make those changes. Whereas right now, we don't even know where to start. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
I did want to add that, I think it really does vary by counties, because we do have a lot of counties that do have dedicated funds, some that don't. I think, as you've heard with Multnomah County, although Multnomah County is willing now to do this, so counties have been keeping track when they've had a dedicated fund for accountability purposes, either showing that they've had somebody, you know, boots on the ground to be able to answer business calls, or to be able to use it for a revolving loan fund, or for other purposes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Sheehan, I note that you are a co-sponsor, and we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Sheehan. I'm representing House District 51, and I think this is the first time I've ever testified before a committee, so this is a historic moment here. I'm very glad to be here speaking in favor of this terrific bill. As a member of the Transportation and Economic Development Committee, one of our big challenges is determining whether something works or not, because the data seems to be a little bit fuzzy, and this just defines the data. I think this is terrific. It ties a program to actual dollars, and that's great. The film and video tax credit is an example of something that works really well, and I think this would create similar types of information structures. When we were hearing the film and video tax credit in our committee, they brought to us just the exact dollars of where they went to what businesses inside of our districts, and I thought that was terrific information and made our what will be a positive decision, I'm assuming, very simple. So it's great. It's transparent. I ditto everything that was said previously. And so that's probably the bulk of my testimony. So I'll let you guys get back to it if you don't have any questions for me.
Thank you for coming. Any questions?
Thank you, Representative Sheehan.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming by. I have no one else signed up unless someone has signed up subsequently. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? And for members of the committee, I understand there are folks from DAS and the lottery here. If there are questions of DAS or the lottery, seeing none, thank you for bringing this, Representative Juan. And I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3188. And, committee members, we have two more bills to hear today, and I'm going to open them both. They both deal with the same issue, so I'm going to open House Bill 3017 and House Bill 3494. Both of these bills deal with sunset date on enterprise zone programs, and you are...
Two members to get, so we'll
get them. Yeah, we're going to...
We'll get
them. Why don't we have Chris Roniak, talk about the bills. Are you going to speak on this one? Okay. So we'll start with Christine, if you'd like to give us a short and sweet.
Okay. House Bill 3017 extends the sunset for normal enterprise zones from June 30th, 2013 to June 30th, 2025. Indirectly, by so doing, it also extends the income tax credits, which are dependent on the existence of the enterprise zone, such as the electronic commerce tax credit. This sunset will not affect reservation and enterprise zones at all, because they do not have a sunset in statute. And House Bill 3017, as distinct from House Bill 3494, will extend the sunset for the long-term rural enterprise zones and the associated tax credit, while House Bill 3494 would not.
Thank you. Representative Jules Bailey.
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the House Revenue Committee. My name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42 from Inner Southeast and Northeast Portland. I'm going to kick off what I think is going to be a fair amount of testimony on both of these bills, and I look forward to testimony from other folks on House Bill 3494. I'm testifying on behalf of 3017 and the concepts embedded in 3494 as well, and look forward to talking with those co-sponsors and talking about the distinction between the two bills and finding a common path forward. I want to be very brief and just frame for you why, in working with Representative Comp and proponents of the Enterprise Zone program, we brought this bill forward to you. The Enterprise Zone program is really about creating a tool for local governments to encourage economic development, and it really is about this local option. Studies have shown the Enterprise Zones do work. They affect the size of investment, the timing of investment, the location of investment, or some combination of the three. And as they incent that economic development and that investment in communities, they impose upon that investment rigorous standards on hiring, on expansion, and on other criteria that local governments have the ability to create and innovate on. I had the opportunity to visit some of the businesses that have been beneficiaries of the Enterprise Zone program that have made investments in Portland in particular. I had a chance to visit a business called Service Steel down in the industrial area on Swan Island that had recently used the Enterprise Zone program as part of an expansion several years back to install high-technology plasma cutters to cut very large pieces of high-performance steel to be able to install these pieces of steel on armored vehicles that were being used to protect our soldiers in Iraq from improvised explosive devices. And one of the contracts to create those vehicles with that shielding went to businesses right here in Portland. Another business close to home and close to my heart is the Widmer Brothers Brewing Company, which used part of the Enterprise Zone program to construct a major expansion in North Portland. And both of those companies said to me that the Enterprise Zone program had made a difference for them in how much investment they were able to do and the timeline on which they were able to do it, especially in a down economic climate in which it is difficult to get credit and difficult to access in that kind of investment. So in summary, the Enterprise Zone program really is about creating good jobs and good investments. And if local governments don't want to partake in the Enterprise Zone program, they don't have to do it. It is a local government program that the state authorizes, and I hope that we can extend the sunset so that local governments will have the option to be able to institute and create those programs if they so choose. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative, any questions for, yes, Representative Burr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bailey, can you clarify for me the difference between an enterprise zone and then the long-term rural enterprise zones? I'm just not familiar with the long-term rural.
Co-Chair Berger, Co-Vice Chair Brewer, Air Brewer, there's a distinction in the program between the two and who can apply and what kind of businesses can take advantage of it. I would leave it to staff to explain the difference between the two. My direct experience is with the Enterprise Zone program located within urban areas, but I'm sure we can have a discussion about the distinction between the two.
Representative Air Brewer, in some counties that are higher unemployment, and there's a couple other characteristics that would qualify a county for long-term rural enterprise zones. And the sponsors of the zone may ask for the designation of the zone as a long-term rural enterprise zone. And what that entails would be a longer period of property tax exemption and also an associated income tax credit to corporations or businesses in that zone.
Thank you. Our good representative has been joined by another distinguished couple of representatives. So, Representative Comp, would you please continue?
Go ahead.
Yes,
yeah,
please.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Barnhart, Co-Chair Berger, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp. I represent House District 22, which includes the cities of Woodburn, Jervis, as well as Northeast Salem. Before you today is House Bill 3017, which would extend the sunset for Oregon's Enterprise Zone program to the year 2025. Members, all of us have felt the impacts of this global recession. Some of our districts have been particularly hard hit and require as much investment as they can possibly get. My hometown of Woodburn is economically disadvantaged, even in good times, having a per capita income that is lower than the state average. This is why we need to continue enterprise zones here in our state. Not only do these zones provide important tools for cities and communities to use in retaining and attracting new employers, they can help existing businesses to be successful at all as well. The city of Salem was recently not only able to retain the businesses of garment manufacturing, saving 157 jobs, this business was also able to upgrade their local facility, adding 67 new jobs. Primeville in Ontario and Eastern Oregon were able to attract internet company of Facebook to their communities, bringing a minimum of 35 full-time jobs with them. Colleagues, it may not seem like a lot, but in this economy it is. Now more than ever, every job matters, and every job has the potential to impact Oregon's standard of living. I submit to you a letter from the City of Woodburn telling their story of what these important zones mean to their economic development. I am also submitting a letter from the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities outlining what good this program does to communities around the state. When considering this issue, I would keep in mind the importance of helping all Oregonians, especially in these tough times. And Co-Chair Berger and I sat together in 2005 when we extended the number of enterprise zones that are here in Oregon, which has, hopefully, you have all the data and the statistics to show how that has helped our communities, and it certainly has helped ones that I represent, and I would appreciate your future consideration.
Thank you, Representative Comp. For your information, and Representative Conger, we've opened both bills, so you can speak to both or either. Representative Conger.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, esteemed colleagues. For the record, I am Jason Conger, representing House District 54. And I missed the first part of the testimony, so I hope I won't be redundant. I'll make this very quick, but I had a couple of explanatory points about enterprise zones since I've learned a lot about them since taking office. Enterprise zones are a focal point for local economic development efforts, and they can only include areas of up to 12 square miles. They're applied for by local government entities, which would include counties, ports, cities, and tribes. And they last for 10 years, so that they're not indefinite, and then local governments have to reapply for them. Business Oregon, our state economic development agency, is responsible for designation and termination of enterprise zones. And with the Department of Revenue and other state agencies, Business Oregon provides marketing support, information, training, et cetera, to support the local economic development efforts involved in enterprise zones. There are a total of 59 enterprise zones throughout the state. That's the statutory maximum. So in one sense, you could certainly look at this program and conclude that it is wildly popular, since it is now in 34 of 36 counties. We have the maximum number allowed by statute. I'm sure there would be more if that number was higher. And it is sponsored, the 59 enterprise zones are sponsored by 103 cities, 11 ports, and 30 counties. The criteria, very quickly, are in statute. 50% or more of the households within the designated area have to have incomes below 80% of Oregon's median. Or, alternatively, the unemployment rate within the designated enterprise zone must be 2% higher than the state's unemployment. And the point there is that these are areas of economic hardship that have great need for economic development and job creation. What are the costs and benefits involved in this? In exchange for locating or expanding into an enterprise zone, a business, an eligible business, which generally means non-retail, traded sector type businesses, receive a total exemption from property taxes for 3 years, up to 5 years if they meet certain higher standards. And they may become eligible for other tax incentives inside in certain enterprise zones. Just a couple of quick statistics. In 2009-2010 budget cycle, so for exemptions approved in that biennium, These statistics are from Business Oregon, by the way. 163 projects were approved. $1.8 billion was invested in capital improvements. There was a cost of approximately $21 million in exempted property taxes, and 6,578 new full-time jobs were created. I'm not an economist. I'm not particularly strong on math skills, but I took my little calculator out, and that amounts to $3,192 per job created, which is an amazingly effective program. Some examples. These are just random examples I sort of picked out of the air. Again, for the 2009-2010 cycle, the Eugene Enterprise Zone had 12 approved projects, approximately $40 million in capital investments. The property tax cost is about $567,000, and 453 full-time jobs were created. Even more effective than the state average, I might note. In Salem, another random, just flipping through the 59 that are available here, Salem had 9 projects, $49 million of capital investment, $617,000 of property tax cost, and 302 new full-time jobs. This is an important program, and it's effective. And it does something that we desperately need in this state. And I'm just going to bring this back because obviously we all have a concern about cost. We have a concern about how this impacts the rest of our spending. And we have a duty, I think, to prioritize how we invest the taxpayers' money. The good news about this program is that the Legislative Revenue Office estimates that the property tax lost is recouped within 7 years from new property tax generated by the facilities that are constructed in these enterprise zones. That doesn't add in the value of other tax benefits to the local communities. It doesn't add in the value to the state of the new income tax that we receive as a result of the jobs created. And it doesn't look past the 7-year time horizon to see what the ultimate impact is. But just to put that in perspective, from 2005 through 2010, which is about midway, I think, through this program's existence, over $1.5 billion of property value was rolled over into the tax rolls because the exemptions expired. So these are new taxes. They were created in the enterprise. The facilities were built in the enterprise zones, received exemptions, and they've now rolled off the exemption and are generating property taxes. So with that, I will mention probably the obvious, which is Central Oregon is heavily impacted, and this is a very important program for Central Oregon. And Rep. Comp already mentioned Prineville, which was a big win to get Facebook to locate there. But I'll give you some stats on Redmond, which is a very, very successful enterprise zone. Since its inception, 122 businesses have located or expanded there. They've created 1,700 jobs and $127 million of new capital investment for the Redmond area with an unemployment rate in excess of 15%. This is a hugely important program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions of our panel here. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been looking at the statutes while you've been talking, and I'm still able to multitask a little bit. I'm referring back now to the bill 3017, which has a very interesting phrase at the bottom of the section in the SMS. By implication or indirectly preserves the income tax credit that applies when a business is located in an electronic commercial enterprise zone by preserving enterprise zones. As I look at these statutes, and I haven't gotten all the way through them yet, it appears to me as though these kind of businesses get to take either a property tax exemption or an income tax credit. Have I got that right, or does it actually do something different than that?
may be a staff question.
That may be a staff question.
Chair Barnhart, I believe that the business could take the property tax exemption as well as the income tax credit.
Okay.
And it's not exclusively dependent on being located in an enterprise zone for electronic commerce, because it's possible for a city to be designated in a zone for electronic commerce without actually being an enterprise zone, I believe.
And if I can add, this is Representative Conger. It's there. Not every enterprise zone is also designated for electronic commerce. So there's 12 of them, I think. 12 out of 59.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, Representative.
Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, I think the answers here make clear, but just to make sure that it's stated succinctly, there are a number of different overlapping programs here that are sometimes referred to, encompassed by the term the Enterprise Zone Program, as it were. And both of these bills simply just change the date around that suite of different programs within that application.
Okay, then I have a follow-up.
Yes.
Does 2017 then change the sunset date on the tax credit itself, or is that controlled some other way?
Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, in House Bill 3017, my understanding is that it changes the date around the designation that...
In fact, I can see it now. It's the very last item in the bill, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. Sorry, asking a question about an obvious thing. I appreciate the answer.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. There's 59 enterprise zones in the state. That means, and if that's the statutory limit, somebody must be left out. I mean, it would seem that no one would want to locate where there wasn't that opportunity. Do we know who that group of, maybe it's a very small group, of folks that would like to have this device but can't? Do we know what that is, that universe is?
Representative, we have a huge panel of folks coming who are expert on this program. I would defer that question until, and we need to get started on them.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
So I think the questions are out there for these panels coming forward to answer. Yes, Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the sponsors of these two bills, because they're very similar, I have two questions, and I'll ask them both at the same time. For Representative Conger, do you have any objection to inclusion of the long-term rural enterprise zones? And then to sponsors of both bills, one extends 12 years, the other extends 10 years. Is there any heart attached to either one? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the sponsors can speak to that.
Co-chairs and Representative Brewer, I think that, so to respond to the first part of the question, no, I don't have any objection to including the long-term rural credit as well. And as far as the time frame goes, I think that the 10 years, I believe my bill, 3494, extends it 10 years, and there was no particular science to that. I think what I did is because the authorizations, the designations last 10 years under the statute, I just tied it to the timing of the designations. But I don't have any heartache about changing that authorization period.
Co-Chair Berger, Representative Brewer, I'm certainly flexible on the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Coming in. I'm going to bring folks up in a panel. There's quite a few of you, and you've signed up for both, so you can speak to both bills when you get up here, those of you who've signed up to both, and I would ask you to be brief and not repetitive so that we can get to everyone. And I'm going to start with a panel of David Stocker, Jack Roberts, and Sarah Garrison, who appear to be a panel who are actively using this program, so that maybe you can answer some of the more technical questions. If not, we'll get it to later panels. Appreciate you coming, and you can go in whatever order you prefer.
I'll go first.
Ladies first.
Good morning, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to be here to testify. I'm, for the record, my name is Sarah Garrison. I'm the Economic Development Manager with the City of Hillsborough. I'm asking you to support both bills or either bill to extend the sunset on the Enterprise Zone program. This is a very valuable local tool that's helped our local companies make investments in new equipment, machinery, or improved facilities. In difficult economic times, it's even more important for us to have strong business development tools to attract this new investment. The Enterprise Zone program is one of those local property tax abatement programs that provides a financial incentive to manufacturing companies to expand their facilities, to invest in machinery, and to hire new employees. So companies need to continually invest in the latest technology to stay competitive. And this program allows them to keep some of those property tax dollars they'd otherwise be spending to reinvest in their businesses, to hire residents, and to stay competitive. Our Enterprise Zone has proven to be exceptionally important to retention and expansion of our existing businesses, as well as attracting some new businesses to the area. We were approved for an Enterprise Zone in 2006. Since that time, a little bit over 4 years, we've helped 10 companies, 13 projects that had invested $651 million in our local economy in new equipment and upgraded facilities. These companies alone have created over 1,000 jobs in Hillsboro. We also have a local procurement plan, which requires our companies to submit a plan showing how they would buy local for their supplies, anything from the actual construction to office supplies to catering, et cetera. These companies alone in that 4 year, in just 2010, invested over $19 million in local purchases in our economy that helped other businesses in Hillsboro stay viable. I want to give you an example. I did provide written testimony and some case studies, but I want to highlight one of those, and that's Triquint Semiconductors, and they're the reason we applied for the Enterprise Zone and got approval back in 2006. We had heard that they were looking to expand, and they had never talked to the state of Oregon or the city of Hillsboro. And we knew that the governor of Texas was wooing them. They have facilities in Texas that had capacity for their expansion. They had facilities in Florida, Costa Rica, and in Massachusetts, all that could have handled this expansion. When we urgently went out to meet with them and asked them to keep their expansion to stay and grow in Hillsboro, they had told us that we didn't have anything to offer them. Well, we quickly worked with the state and looked at the Enterprise Zone program, and within a month they made their decision to stay and invest in their headquarters campus, 32 acres in Hillsboro, and brought another 40 jobs there, utilized the facility in Hillsboro, and since then they've used that Enterprise Zone program two other times. They have about 700 employees, but they created another 170 and have made significant investments in the millions of dollars in Hillsboro. That's just one example. The other types of companies that really benefit from the Enterprise Zone program are really small and medium-sized businesses. We have AMG, which is Apparel Manufacturing Group, that manufactures sports and apparel. One of their customers is Nike. They also do some medical uniforms for RS Medical. They actually are bucking the trend of manufacturing overseas and have brought their manufacturing back to the U.S. and are creating the customized garments that we need here and the jobs that we need here. So I guess in summary, I would say that we strongly support this tax investment. It's available to stimulate business investment in our areas, and it supports and improves the quality of life in Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the Executive Director of the Lane Metro Partnership, which is a nonprofit economic development agency for Eugene, Springfield, Lane County. We've used the Enterprise Zone in our county a lot. We have a number of them. Eugene and Springfield are both very active and successful Enterprise Zones. Our smaller communities also have taken advantage of them. Cottage Grove, Oak Ridge, Junction City and Harrisburg, actually across the county line, share theirs, Vinita and Florence. Enterprise Zones are a valuable tool, but I think sometimes we tend to look at primarily the recruitments from outside the area, which get the headlines, and we don't recognize that most companies that use the Enterprise Zone are existing businesses that are growing and expanding. They generally have to increase their employment by at least 10% and make an investment of $50,000. But in doing that, they're able to get some deferral of the new investment going on the tax rolls that will enable them to make that investment, that expansion, sooner than they would otherwise, or enables us to keep the company there rather than look at their investment opportunity to expand someplace else. It's very difficult to prove that this makes the difference in the deal. And everyone always asks, but for this, would they have come anyway? I can tell you right now, we're in the middle of a recruitment. I hope we're very close to getting them there. It's a capital-intensive investment. It's not in Representative Barnhart's district. It's next door in Representative Holvey's district. But at our first meeting, they knew about Oregon. They knew about the situation here. They asked specifically about the Enterprise Zone and only wanted to look at properties inside the Enterprise Zone because that enabled them to balance off some other costs of being in Oregon. But the other thing I think that we need to do is to look at this a little bit differently, not as a giveaway, as some would say, or not really as a subsidy, which is one of those words that makes my skin crawl because that implies it's an ongoing underwriting of the cost of doing business. We see this as an incentive. It's part of helping to make the deal, whether it's for someone coming in or someone who's trying to grow and expand. It's a way that we can help them win and us win, too. I would compare it more to when you need to buy a new washer and dryer, you go down to a department store, and they say, great, if you buy this, there'll be no payment, no interest for 60 days or 90 days. They're not subsidizing your household budget. And they're not doing that because they like to give away money. They're doing it to close the sale. We have seen that time and time again. And nobody makes their decision exclusively on tax benefits. There is no tax break that makes it worthwhile to locate in the wrong place. But there's often more than one right place to be. And when you're showing what your commitment is to the company, your desire to have them there, and your sensitivity for their costs, Enterprise Zone is an extremely valuable tool. It helped us a lot when the University of Oregon decided the best place for the new Matt Court basketball arena was where Williams Bakery had existed for a century. It just so happened that they had cobbled this together over the years. It was not an efficient operation, and so it was a good chance for them to look at relocating. But when the Bob Albers came down and I took him around to show him where it was, he was skeptical they could find a place here. I thought they'd have to leave the area. We found a place less than 2 miles away in Glenwood where they could not only build their new building but expand their employment by the requisite 10%. They could have room for future expansion and growth, and their operation is more successful. But they also got the Enterprise Zone benefits, which helped that move pencil out for them. That's why it's important that we have this tool and why we believe that extending the sunset, and I'm like Sarah, whether it's 2023 or 2025 doesn't matter. I do think that the long-term rural should be included, although we've actually not been able to use that in Lane County because of, in the past, our economic condition wasn't bad enough. We probably qualify now. But in any event, getting this done and getting it done this session is critically important.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is David Stocker. I'm with the Columbia County Economic Team. My organization represents all of the local governments within Columbia County and over a dozen private businesses that are based in the county who are working together to promote economic development countywide. Columbia County, without a doubt, has to fight for every single job that we now, to keep every single job that we now have and to attract every job that we hope to gain in the future. We're in competition with other states and foreign competitors. Without a doubt, the Enterprise Zone program has been a vital tool in our efforts to diversify our economic base to include a cadre of creative lean manufacturers in addition to our traditional base of timber and wood products manufacturers as well, which is why we support both or either of those bills that are before you today. Practically all of the local jurisdictions within Columbia County have now joined an Enterprise Zone as a local sponsor, making this program a starting point for cross-jurisdictional partnership, which is so vital to proactive economic development in a rural, emerging urban context. It's important to us for both purposes of business attraction and retention. I'll start with attraction very briefly because a lot of the points that my colleagues have made, we want to reinforce, but I don't want to belabor the points. We view Enterprise Zones as important to our efforts both at the front end in marketing our county to businesses who are looking to relocate to Oregon from other places, and also the back end of closing the deal, making a deal that is attractive and provides preferred returns relative to other sites that might be in the mix for those particular projects. Our enterprise zones have been successful for companies in a range of different sizes, ranging everything from a very small manufacturer called Oregon Shepherd, which has just 8 employees in Rainier. They manufacture green insulation. They manufacture insulation using lamb's wool, supporting Oregon's sheep growers, and providing new markets for those products in the form of home insulation using lamb's wool. Mid-sized businesses, Pacific Stainless, which has 80-plus employees at peak. They supply clean room equipment for manufacturers as a downstream supplier for manufacturers who ultimately place products in Intel's facilities and presumably TriQuint semiconductors facilities as well. And also large multinational corporations like U.S. Gypsum has taken advantage of the Enterprise Zone program and making that a decisive factor in their decision to locate in the county as well. But I think that especially right now, given these economic times, our emphasis really is on retention as well. Very recently, I was approached by a group of businesses that operate in the general aviation industry who are now based at the Scappoose Airport. Cumulatively, they have over 200 employees. So if they were one business, they would be one of the county's larger employers. They say, and they've proven via email documentation, that on a weekly or biweekly basis, they're receiving emails from people like ourselves and other places around the country wooing their business, who are able to offer them free buildings, free rent for a period of time, and very attractive incentives. Clearly, there are reasons why they chose to locate in Scappoose, and there are cost advantages for them to stay, and also cost disincentives for them to decide to relocate. But at some point, I think that some of those offers have raised some of their eyebrows, which is why that conversation was initiated. And as a result, we ended up extending one of our enterprise zones from Columbia City and St. Helens down to Scappoose to provide another quiver another arrow in our quiver to help keep those businesses in the county. Three of those firms have proposed expansions, and although we are a smaller area, we have less than 50,000 people in Columbia County, which relative to the city of Hillsborough, 20 jobs doesn't sound like necessarily a lot, but for us it really is. And so these three expansions already are proposed to create 20 new jobs in our area that are good-paying jobs above the county median. So we're very pleased that this expansion of the enterprise zone has moved forward, and we hope that we can continue to offer these benefits in the future, which is why, again, I encourage you to support either one of those bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So this is one of the tools in the toolbox. I guess I'm curious about what it is you're trying to fix with this tool. Is it the competition with the other states? Is it the competition with other towns in Oregon? Is it the problem we have with the rest of our tax structure? Or is it just one of those additional things we can throw on the table when we're bidding for to keep someone here? I'd like a prioritization, too, and a nice little organized response.
Co-chairs, Representative Benz, I'll take the first stab at this, and I will start by saying that I speak for myself, and I don't want to suggest that anybody else agrees with me. My view on that is that this is primarily for us to compete against areas in other states. I know there is a strong feeling that some have inside the state that this provides an advantage, but as you alluded to before, so many places in Oregon have enterprise zones. It's not a huge advantage within the state, I don't believe. And in fact, in 2003, which is the last time we increased the number of enterprise zones, it was a bill that Representative Scott Bruin introduced at my request that did that, but the original version of the bill actually took the cap off altogether and said anybody wants to be an enterprise zone in Oregon can get it. That ran into a lot of resistance because there are communities that feel that they have an advantage by having the enterprise zone. I think it's more that it gives us a tool here in Oregon to use when we're competing in other areas where they have different tax systems, and they see that. Traditionally, it's been important because our property tax used to be among the highest in the country. Now it's moved back more to the middle of the pack, but it's still a pretty big cost for a lot of companies that are capital intensive, and in most cases don't place a huge burden on the service delivery system for the cities and counties. And so, in effect, although they would I think probably object to this characterization. Getting a large manufacturing or industrial investment is a windfall in property taxes. If you can give back the first couple of years, that's where I get back to my analogy of the washer and dryer, you're going to make enough. The best example I can give you that is Hyundai, later Hynix in Lane County, which in Eugene, was very controversial. People thought we're giving away the store. Last year, after shutting down, they were still the largest property taxpayer in Lane County. In fact, for several years, they were paying more in property taxes than the next 9 property taxpayer combined. So we didn't lose money the time they were there, and we'd love to see that up and running again. And if that means someone else gets another enterprise zone benefit up front to get them there, it'll be well worth it.
Thank you.
Representative Bentz, I don't think that our competition is Gresham versus Salem versus Eugene. Our competition is really national and international, especially in the attraction of new companies to Hillsborough. What we do need to do, though, is make sure that we've got equity, that we're treating our existing businesses the same as when we're wining and dining these new companies coming in. The Enterprise Zone is the only local tool that we have in Hillsborough. It is very important for us to keep and help our existing companies grow, and this is one tool that does that by doing a very short-term property tax abatement, the 3 to 5 years, to allow them to reinvest that money in their businesses and stay competitive.
That's a great question. There are rules within the system that prevent an enterprise zone from poaching jobs and businesses from other parts of the state. So I think the people who created this program were very wise to include that initially to address those very concerns. But I would say that we are in very fierce competition with other parts of the United States and other places around the world, not just for businesses and jobs, but to attract capital, investment capital. And the Enterprise Zone is a local tool that we can apply in certain cases to attract investment capital, specifically in trade sector businesses. The cost of transportation, the cost of telecommunications has plummeted over the last several decades, meaning that it's easier than ever for a business that might locate in Columbia County to locate somewhere else in the United States, in China, wherever, which is why we value this program to enhance the attractiveness of our area to attract those businesses.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, Representative.
Thank you. Just one very quick question. Jack, right at the end of your testimony, you said it was important to do it this year. I think I know the answer to the question, but this thing doesn't expire until June of 13. Why this year?
Well, because, as I mentioned, we're in the process right now of recruiting someone today. If this had been sunsetting at the end of June of this year, we would have already lost those guys because of the uncertainty of whether or not this would continue on. We can't run right up to the deadline and do this. We really need to have the time.
I thought that was the answer. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. I think it's time to hear from the other view, so I'm going to ask Jody Weiser and March Kelly and Mark Lindauer to come up and give us a different perspective.
For the record, I'm Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. The plural of anecdote is not data. And today you'll hear a lot of anecdotes about how enterprise zones are wonderful for various areas. And in fact, the people that work with these have that experience. That's what it feels like when they're in the field. I spent some time examining research from California, where there have been 2 very substantive studies recently, to look at what actually happens if you compare zones that are very similar and see what happens to job growth within those zones. Most of the research that's been done that looks at how effective are enterprise zones, and they exist in most every state, at creating jobs, they have a hard time finding a way to match zones. And what they did in the first study I looked at in California is they used the businesses within 1,000 feet around an enterprise zone as their comparative for one set of data, and they used, because enterprise zones often expand, they'll start in one area and then they'll add another area and another area. They looked at what happened in an enterprise zone that existed and in its next expansion area. And what they found was no evidence that enterprise zones generate more jobs than non-enterprise zones. So that doesn't fit with what you'll hear today, but it is what the analysts find when they try to look at data carefully. You've been asked to ask yourself some questions as you consider extension of our sunsetted tax credits. So what would happen if this credit fully sunsets, or if it were reduced by 50% instead of forgiving all property taxes for 3 years or 5 years? You said, okay, you'll pay half as much. And from the research I looked at, what would happen is the counties and special districts would have more money to spend. People will come here for a variety of reasons. The tax breaks at $3,000 or $11,000 per job aren't the critical factor. They're going to come here because our salaries are lower and we have a skilled workforce, because our power costs are lower, because we have ample clean water that is inexpensive, because there are empty buildings or buildable land. Those are the critical elements that a business is going to use, not this kind of tax break, which means that the counties in which these employers have businesses don't have the money to keep their services running, whether it's a crisis center or a library that is cut because the tax revenue isn't coming in. One of the questions that you're supposed to ask is, what background information on the effectiveness of this type of credit is available from other states? And that's why I looked at the two California studies. The first one was the 2009 study, Do California's Enterprise Zones Create Jobs? And they looked at evidence from 1992 through 2004. It was that study and the second study that I've read, California's Enterprise Zones Missed the Mark, that have caused Governor Brown to call for an end to the tax credit program in his state. It's a far more expensive program, obviously, because it's a much bigger state. It's nearly $1 billion that he's saying, we need this money to take care of the services that we're supposed to provide, and the evidence simply does not support that this is a good use of our resources. What was said for California applies as well to Oregon. For cash-strapped state, it's too costly a program to simply continue with business as usual without clear evidence of the program's benefits, as well as any well-defined plans for how to make the program more effective. In theory, there is nothing wrong with targeted tax breaks for businesses to help create jobs. And of all the things that I've looked at that this state does, this is the cheapest. But it may not be actually creating jobs, and that's the point of looking at what the other states are doing. With our unemployment rate hovering above 10%, we need all the help we can get. But in practice, enterprise zone programs across the country have failed. To extend these sunsets, you need proof that these investments are worthy, more worthy than any other options for increasing employment that will come before you. And there are a host of bills and there are a host of other things we do for economic development, or for allowing the local taxing districts to begin receiving the taxes that they are due. Thank you.
Good morning. Mark Landauer representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The special districts represent approximately 900 single service districts across the state of Oregon. And SDAO is opposed to the elimination or extension, I should say, of the sunset. According to the 2011-13 Oregon tax expenditure report, approximately $1.3 billion of assessed value was exempted in 2009-10. The property tax loss in 2009 through 11 was approximately $33 million, and $34.6 million is expected to be exempted in the next biennium. SDO has opposed the enterprise zone for some time, and what it really comes down to is the fact that a single government entity, whether it be a city or a county, can unilaterally exempt property taxes for another government entity. As you know, there are other government entities that rely heavily on property taxes. Of course, cities, counties, but there are also community colleges, the K through 12 education system, and special districts. Our association and our members represent a very small portion of the total property tax pie. You'll note on my testimony, the last page, a pie graph that was provided by the Department of Revenue on property taxes that shares, you know, what the reliance of property tax is amongst the varying local governments. Special districts receive approximately 13% of the property tax, as compared to cities that are approximately 22, counties 19, community colleges 4%, and of course K through 12 about 42%, if my memory serves me correctly. The ability of a city or county to exempt the property tax does have a cost, and that cost is borne by all those entities. Now, granted, this program may very well generate jobs and investment. The but-for question is a fair question to ask. Nevertheless, some of these exemptions do result in a greater service demand, in particular fire services, for example. We believe that other local governments ought to be able to have a larger role in making the decisions as to whether or not this program is beneficial to them and whether or not they ought to be able to exempt their portion of the property tax. I would submit that 13%, at least for special districts, not being exempted is not going to be a make-or-break amount for a for this type of a decision by a business entity. Another point that I'd like to make is that some of the enterprise zones, it's important to look at the amount of property tax exempted versus the number of jobs created. The Legislative Revenue Office conducted a study in 2006. That study showed that the average property tax per job created that was exempted was about $4,600. There was one instance where for over $500,000 was exempted to create a single job as an average. That's a lot of money. We believe that there are some standards or more rigorous standards that ought to be considered for this program. For example, what are the long-term job retention statistics for these companies that are receiving these tax breaks? They can receive a tax break, an exemption for 3 years, in some cases 5 years. What is happening? Are those jobs still there 7 years, 10 years afterwards? We don't have data on that. Without providing an opt-out, more rigorous reporting requirements, or providing more strategic focus to truly distressed areas. We cannot support the extension of this program. We believe that other alternatives are available to the legislature. For example, extending the new construction tax exemption from 1 year to 2, maybe 3 years. An added benefit, of course, would be to eliminate the overhead costs that the department or the Oregon Business Development Department is running. Another issue may be if you allow for an opt-out, perhaps creating this problem or this program, making it available to all communities in the state. The issue that I hear in this building is we need to create jobs. Well, make the whole state an enterprise zone then. Make Oregon open for business. With that, you have my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I'll finish the panel and then questions for all three of you.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women. And I will make my remarks brief because I think the two people who preceded me have sort of talked about many of the issues, but I would like to bring up a couple. Location, location, location. Oregon is well-suited for manufacturing given the increasing amount of trade that we do with the Pacific Rim. We are situated and have always been situated in good transportation corridors, and we have a good transportation system with which to get goods to market. So that's one of the reasons why companies may choose to locate here. So I would think that some study might take a look at why people located here and not just the enterprise zone, because as we know from the written testimony that other people have submitted, almost all states have enterprise zones. So uniqueness of the enterprise zone does not mean Oregon is unique. In written testimony that you have from the assorted people, part of the investments that are substantial pencil out to be an average of $1.2 million. Some of the jobs that are created, especially the call center jobs, are jobs that are probably between $8.50 and $10 an hour. Some of the jobs are part-time, which means that those jobs don't come with benefits. So if we're looking at jobs, we really need to make sure that we look at jobs that are not going to cost the state in other benefits that we provide. Two other tools that the committee has available to them are two studies. One, the Ruffalo study that this committee received in 2007, and the other study is the Legislative Revenue Office's study of 2009. And there are a couple of things that I'd like to point out from those studies, but you can look at them yourselves. The Ruffalo study said that you should require a thorough fiscal impact assessment for projects seeking exemption from local property taxes, which includes review and comment by affected taxing districts. You should mandate specific data reporting and evaluation requirements related to investment and employment on the part of the companies and the administrative entities. And on an annual basis, mandate annual specific data reporting and evaluation requirements related to economic distress criteria on the part of the local zone sponsors and state administrative areas, because it seems that while these enterprise zones were first started to help distressed areas, that is now questionable in their use. Your LFO study wants a longer series of data. The study that they had with the data available that was geocoded started in 2003 and ended in 2006. And there were places where it did look like maybe employment increased in that ensuing years. But the information that you got last week when you had reserves had a chart in it that showed 2003's employment with a big dip. As you might remember, Oregon had the highest unemployment rate in the country and the highest in the Pacific Northwest, of course, during 2003. So there would be gains no matter where you were, most likely, as the economy recovered and there were more jobs. I would submit that extending the tax credits to 2023 or 2025, if you extend them at all, is too long. And I would also suggest that maybe you could have some additional data and additional study and pursue this question in the February 2012 session and still have time to extend the tax credits if that, or the tax exemptions, if that is what you really want to do. Thank you, and we'll entertain questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Weiser, did you review any of the studies from Oregon on enterprise zones?
Pardon? I'm sorry, what?
Did you review any of the studies from Oregon on enterprise zones?
No, that my we kind of took assignments, and I took the California assignment.
Okay. Comment, Madam Co-Chair? Thank you. I've heard a lot of references to location in the testimony. It might be worth pointing out to the committee that this is not just about location of investment, but also about the size of an investment once an expansion decision is made and the timing of that investment, of when that investment decision is made. It's not just about location. And the combination of all those things is affected by the distortionary impacts of capital taxation. And it's one thing that liberal economists and conservative economists agree on, that capital taxation is distortionary. And there may be reasons for that distortion, for the social good, but they are distortionary. I would suggest to Ms. Weiser that perhaps your testimony is misplaced and better put before local governments, before the city of Portland. For example, over the last several iterations of the program, they have made tighter modifications of the program, improvements to the program as they've applied for a reauthorization of the program. And it may be that local governments are the place to decide whether or not it makes sense for them and is worth the trade-off in revenue and the kinds of restrictions that would go on to that program for job creation. But in my mind, this bill is about authorizing that tool. Thank you,
Representative Bailey. Representative Warren.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. First a question, then a comment. Question is, I've heard a lot of reference to a California study. Who conducted that study, and where can I find it?
I will submit that. I'll give you a copy.
Okay, thank you.
You should have it. It's in the footnotes of what I, of my testimony. There's two studies, and they're...
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for pointing that out. Secondly, I want to point out for the committee's benefit, the Troutdale Reynolds Industrial Park, which is in my district and was long the main employer of the Troutdale area when it was the Reynolds Aluminum Plant. And when they bailed in the 90s, it left a hollowed out husk in the middle of my district that sat there during the greatest and strongest expansion, economic expansion, perhaps in this nation's history, certainly since World War II. And it sat there and nothing happened. This wonderful state that I love, that most of us love, that apparently is a great place to locate a business, saw no activity. And my neighbors were left without jobs, family wage or otherwise. We were traveling downtown or all the way across town to Hillsboro where the jobs were being created. And it wasn't until an enterprise zone was created the Federal Express decided to move in. That was the key determining factor. FedEx was going to go to Camas. And they told us that, along with many other businesses and many of my neighbors and friends that moved across the river to Washington, FedEx was going to be next. But they came to us because of an enterprise zone and because Troutdale bent over backwards and did everything we could to work with them in partnership. And now there are 800 jobs in Troutdale, good jobs, that wouldn't be there without the enterprise zone. So you can call that anecdotal, I understand. But the reality is that that's a pretty powerful story that speaks to the benefit of the Enterprise Zone program. And I am wholeheartedly in support of this expansion. And I thank Representative Bailey for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Any further questions from this panel? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. We have quite a few left here. I'm going to ask the panel of Ann Hannes from AOC, Michael Novick from LOC, and Jack Esselman from OEDA to come up and speak to these bills, if you would. And and then we have some Portland Development and other city folks who are on deck. Including your mate.
Okay.
Co-Chair Berger, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman of Tonkin Torp, appearing before you today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association. We are a not-for-profit organization that represents economic development professionals throughout the state, like those you heard from earlier today and those you will hear from. I'll be very brief with my testimony. You've heard their rationale for the extension of the program. I just want to, for the record, perhaps clarify a few points. As it relates to income tax credits that are linked to the enterprise zone statutes, there are fundamentally three. There's one for tribal governments. I think you guys took care of that last legislative session, if memory serves. So that's kind of off the table for this session. There's long-term rural enterprise zones. 3017 takes care of that. 3494 does not. And then there's this e-commerce income tax credit within enterprise zones. Neither of these bills would address that directly. That sunsets this year. We only have 10 of them in the state. There's a limit of 10, I should say. Only 8 are in use right now. It's a $2 million income tax credit cap per company. Your committee actually has a bill, 3172, that isn't in your committee. That it's over in Transportation Economic Development with a subsequent referral of tax credits. So we commend that bill to you. As it relates to the California studies you've heard about, our organization is very familiar with those studies. We've reviewed them. Once again, California has something we don't want in Oregon, which is a very ineffective enterprise zone program. Their program is very onerous and very complicated. It doesn't work, and we'd submit to you that the reason they're getting rid of it is because it doesn't create jobs. And we should take that as a sign that they may be getting their act together and take steps to preserve things that do work, like the enterprise zone in Oregon. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Ann Hannes with the Association of Oregon Counties. AOC strongly supports continuing the Enterprise Zone program, and that includes both the short-term as electronic as well as the long-term Enterprise Zone programs. We basically have put our money where our mouth is when it comes to trying to attract jobs and retain jobs, and that is because this does require a local sponsor, be it a city, port, or a county, and there are a number of enterprise zones that are supported by the counties. This has given us a means to be able to invest and encourage both businesses and jobs to come here, and you'll hear more from others about how they have been able to successfully use this tool. So I think it's important, if I put my economist hat on, that we try to think a little bit longer as we're trying to have our strategy in this state for economic development, because we have to have a tool like this that is strongly supported on the local level that really has been cost effective in terms of the cost per job and has been able to be a place that has encouraged business to invest here has been extremely important. So with that, AOC urges your support for the extension of the Enterprise Zone programs.
Good morning, Chair Berger and members of the committee. For the record, Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities. I will be brief. There's been quite a bit of positive testimony in support of extending the E-Zone extension. The League of Oregon Cities supports the extension of the sunset. In fact, you have actually have quite a bit of previous testimony to thank for my brief testimony. So in addition to the testimony from Hillsboro and I believe Salem coming up, as well as Portland and the letter from Woodburn and the letter from City Medford, I just wanted to throw in one comment from the mayor of Redmond. George Endicott sent me a note from John Stark, the Redmond Economic with the Redmond Economic Development Commission, which was by far the most valuable incentive we have to offer expanding or relocating companies is the Enterprise Zone program. So the League supports this bill. We certainly thank Representatives Bailey, Comp, Conger, and certainly Representative Wand for his comment recently.
Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Mayor Jim Kite, David Eatwell, and John Wales from Salem to come up as a panel, if you would.
Good
Please go ahead.
Chair Berger and committee members, I wasn't aware that we were going to be talking.
Name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary Jim Carter Traddale. I wasn't aware this subject was coming up, and I almost did an about face as I walked out of the room to go through the monsoons and head back to my community at Troutdale. But when I heard about the fact that the Enterprise Zone may sunset, I wanted to come and give my testimony and talk about the success story that Troutdale has experienced. And Representative Wand gave kind of a snapshot of that, but I'd like to add to that. This particular site, as he indicated, was a Superfund site. And Alcoa Aluminum spent $213 million to take this property and clean it up. They made that major investment for two reasons. One, we incorporated this city into our boundaries. And number two, we created that enterprise zone. So there was an incentive on the part of Alcoa to do that. What this means in real terms, as he indicated, FedEx has built a regional hub. Regional hub services Oregon, all of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, parts of Montana, and Northern California. In real terms, it's 750 jobs currently and expected to expand to 1,000 jobs within 5 years with a $57 million payroll. I heard some of the testimony of people saying, well, it's part-time jobs, there's minimum wage jobs. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I was in college, I was happy to get a minimum wage job. And we have a Mount Hood Community College, which FedEx provides a employment, and it's close by. I mean, I remember starting at 75 cents an hour, worked up to a whole $1.25 an hour. So I was real happy to work in downtown Portland at a minimum wage job, because absent that, I wouldn't have had a job. They're looking to expand their property. They're at 445,000 square feet, and they've already talked about expanding to 660,000 square feet. There is 11 additional lots with the Trip property. We call it the Troutdale Reynolds Industrial Park. As a result of creating an enterprise zone within Troutdale, the adjoining cities, Wood Village, as well as Fairview, have expanded and added a enterprise zone as well. I want to speak to Ms. Snomer that...
We have quite a bit more testimony.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up
Mayor,
real quick.
Be
happy to do that. The other misnomer is that people are under the mistaken identity that they pay no property tax at all. Right now, minus the improvements, FedEx is paying $1.6 million in property tax. I put it to you that absent creating that enterprise zone, number one, they would have located in Washington. Number two, we wouldn't have had that $1.6 million in additional tax revenue. What this means is when the enterprise zone, when that feature runs out, just the city of Troutdale alone will have $370,000 in additional property tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Good morning. Chair Berger and members of the committee. My name is John Wales. I'm the Interim Director of Urban Development for the City of Salem, and I'll be very brief. I here today to support House Bill 3017 and concur with the other testimony that's been given today in support of the bill. I think as you've already heard and from the letter that's been submitted by the Strategic Economic Development Corporation, SEDCOR, who represents Salem on our enterprise zone and acts as our enterprise zone manager, we believe that the program has been enormously successful for Salem. In the past 2 years since we've recertified our program, we have been able to attract one new company and an expansion of an existing company with almost 300 jobs created, and a benefit to the community as well. What is particularly important, and I think has been heard earlier in the testimony, is that as we tour candidates for various sites in our community, the enterprise zone sites are the ones that are asked for. So again, I'd like to stress that point that if we don't have them coming here, if we don't have them, we can't even show property, we're certainly not going to get the jobs. Thank you.
Again, Co-Chair Berger and committee members. My name is Dave Eatwell. I'm still the Economic Development Director for the West Columbia Gorge Consortium, and I'm here to speak in support of Bill 3017. As a board member of the Oregon Economic Development Association, I can tell you that enterprise zones are responsible for creating and retaining jobs counted in the thousands, and they generate private investment of more than $1 billion over the last 25 years. And you'll hear a lot about those. I'm not here to talk about those projects. Within the consortium service area, we are four small enterprise zones. Each of the four cities has their own enterprise zone. By comparison to many of the enterprise zones you'll hear about, they are very small. The aggregated population of these four cities is only 30,000 people, spread out over quite a bit of an area. And these are four small towns that exist in the shadow of the major metropolitan area. So we have very few tools in the toolbox. The incentives are fuel for development of our industrial land, and the resources are meager. Without this, these small towns would not have the ability to compete and regionally, and all of the good jobs would continue to go to the west side, which is, you know, that's good for the metropolitan area, but we would like to see something happening on the east side of the metropolitan area. We are not California, and I question the validity of such a comparison. Economic indicators point to a slow reversal of negative term trends that have led the economies of cities, big and small, decimated. With the ability to attract businesses that bring jobs, industrial infrastructure investment, and that's private investment, the tax base enhancement, the road back will be longer and more difficult without enterprise zones. Please keep this instrument in our toolboxes and vote in support of House Bill 3017. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Thank you very much for coming. And I have another panel, Bruce Allen, Andy Reid, and Andrew Olson again. If you'd come forward, and please don't repeat, if you would.
I'll speak for PDC, Andy.
We've lost one. Erica, you want to come forward on this? Oh, no, there's the third. Oh, I was going to say we lost one. Okay, there we go.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Olson again for the record. I'm a policy analyst for Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel. I submitted testimony on behalf of her. She's also the chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Community Development Committee. So that committee has voted in support. I'm not going to repeat anyone else, but I would like to give you a couple examples of what the enterprise zones have done in Multnomah County. We have three enterprise zones in Multnomah County: North Portland, Gresham, and the Columbia Cascade Enterprise Zone, which is the FedEx example that was mentioned previously. In Multnomah County, we have a variety of businesses that have taken advantage of this, from 500 Pound, which is a internet marketing agency that got a $66,000 abatement, to the United Parcel Service, which got $4.3 million. So as you can see, it's a diversity of businesses as well as funds that they've gotten from that. The only other thing I'd like to say is that the commissioner is very in support of this, in large part because there is a sunset, unlike things like urban renewal districts, where they tend to go on in perpetuity without ever ending. It's really important that, you know, these do have an end to them. So we support it and urge your support as well. Thank you.
Mr. Allen?
Yes.
I note that you have submitted written testimony. It would be preferable that you not read it, but summarize it.
I will.
If you would.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just introduce myself. I'm Bruce Allen. I'm a senior development manager with the Portland Development Commission. I manage our work in the advanced manufacturing industry, so I work with a lot of these businesses we're talking about right now. I also manage the Enterprise Zone with Andy Reid, and Andy can answer any detailed questions that I might not be able to. Portland's had its Enterprise Zone for 15 years. The result has been over $1 billion in investment and over 5,000 new jobs. And let me just emphasize what other people have said. It is really the only tool that allows us to compete with some other regions and other states, because it allows something that catches their attention. It's a big enough draw that actually makes them change their mind in many cases. We have 27 companies in our E-Zone right now. Last year, they invested $141 million in new capital investments. In 2010, the numbers are probably going to be the same. We haven't seen them. They come in May. And for next year, we expect to see six new companies coming into the E-Zone, and they will bring an estimated $110 million in new investment. In Portland, we do something that some of the other cities and towns do. We require these companies to also give back some of that investment. So each year they have to pay a portion of the abatement that they received back in what we call community contributions. And that money is then spent for job training, to train some of the people that are actually hired by these companies, and also to help invest in nonprofits and other businesses that that create jobs in North and Northeast Portland. And just to keep it brief, let me just say a couple other things. I want to emphasize that the abatement is only on new investment, so it doesn't include land. It doesn't include anything that is already there, and so those businesses do continue to pay taxes. And secondly, in terms of the wages, I know in Portland we've looked at the average wage for the workers in these projects that receive the abatement is $20 an hour. So they are indeed quality jobs. And the third point I'd like to make is that, as was mentioned earlier, most of these companies are traded sector companies, which means they sell goods and products outside of Oregon, so they bring new money into the economy. And these are companies that could pretty much choose to work anywhere or to site themselves anywhere in the country. Yeah. So keep my comments short. I'll stop there, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. I'm here to answer any questions if you have them. Thank you.
Questions of this panel? I know I'm hurrying you, but do companies that come in when you explain to them your community reinvestment or whatever you call that program where they're expected, do you find resistance to that? What's their reaction to that?
It's a requirement that it's a local requirement,
yes.
And they don't have any choice, but I think that that they realize that getting the abatement for 5 years, it's a small price to pay. In other words, they pay basically 15% of that value back to the community. So they're supportive. It doesn't scare anybody away that we know of.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming. We have a few more. Committee members, if you have something at 10 that you need to go to, we will stay and finish, I think, because I can stay. And we've got Scott Derrickson, Jim Hendricks, Bill Olson. Bill, are you still here? Okay, how about you three? I know Bill, you're... Go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Scott Derrickson. I'm the city administrator for the city of Woodburn, and I've been asked by the Woodburn City Council to come here today to talk to you a little bit about the city's economic development efforts that we've implemented in the last 2 years to be competitive for the city of Woodburn. As you know, much of our community is low to moderate income and generally at-risk population. And with the downturn of the economy, the city council wanted to be more competitive, to attract investment, to draw capital to our community. And the enterprise zone designation that we received last year is now the centerpiece of that. That application was a development through a partnership with the local area chamber of commerce, local businesses, and all the taxing districts within the city of Woodburn, all of which supported the program and wrote letters of support for the enterprise zone. With the sunset of the enterprise zone hanging out there, we're a little concerned that it hampers our credibility with the businesses that we're talking to right now about whether the program will continue to be in effect and if it's a good investment in the city of Woodburn. So the city council would ask that you support the renewal and the extension of the program and that you do it as fast as you can. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
I'm Jim Hendricks, also of the city of Woodburn. I'd just like to echo what Scott has said. My background previously to coming to Woodburn, I worked in Redmond, Oregon, a very effective tool that was utilized there. We just got the program this last July. I want to have it as a tool to work with businesses because I know it is an effective tool to be able to talk about these advantages. So with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm a co-chair of the Tax and Revenue Committee of the Human Services Coalition. Forgive my continuing battle with this frog. I am here simply to say that I don't have the kind of data available that would enable me to either be for or against this program, and I'm certainly a little bit reluctant to be here to say that I'm watching out for cities and counties' interests when I've heard them testify in favor of this. However, the concern that we have is with transparency and with the availability of data so that citizens, other than people that are directly involved, and I certainly understand their enthusiasm for this program, but so citizens who feel there may be a statewide interest can evaluate the data and see what kind of firms are there, where they come from, are they being, in effect, attracted from other communities in Oregon so that they would be losing a business to the enterprise zone. I don't have those data. I have not made a complete study of this. It's a pretty complicated topic. We just encourage you to be sure you have those data and to share them, either by requiring that the enterprise zone legislation include that requirement for data, that and that you look very carefully at whether there's a net economic benefit to Oregon from these programs. There may be to individual communities, and that in and of itself may be enough for you to want to go ahead. But the question is, are we cannibalizing other areas? I think that's one of the questions that needs to be answered. Thank you.
Questions of this panel? Thank you. Thank you for coming, all three. And the only one left on the list is Erica Hegedorn. And anyone else who would like to come forward, there's two more seats at the table. You don't look like Erica, but that's okay. If you'd identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Kanner. I'm the county administrator for Deschutes County. And I will not belabor what's been said except to add that the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners strongly supports extension of the sunset date for enterprise zones. It's been an extremely effective tool in Deschutes County. And the only thing I would add to what's already been said in support of extending the sunset date is that when cities and counties are in the kind of economic battle that we are in right now, you fire every arrow in your quiver. And I would ask the committee to support extension of the sunset.
Thank you.
Hi, Chair Berger and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Woolsey. I'm with Tax Fairness Oregon.
Oh, I have you down here and I didn't. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I got myself up here.
Okay.
As Jody pointed out, that Democratic Governor Brown from California wanted to eliminate the economic zones there, or the enterprise zones, rather. He's not alone. I found in my research that Representative Republican Governor Christie from New Jersey also is calling for suspension of the economic zones in his state. A study by the New Jersey Institute of Technology, the Delta Development Group, and the HRNA advisors, their study was very convincing for Governor Christie. I also found a study by Peter Fisher, a professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Iowa, and his colleague Alan Peters. They found that 70% or more of the new jobs created by companies would have been created anyway. The tax exemptions don't spur creation of enough real estate development and new jobs to offset the loss of tax revenue. And that's all I have. Thank you very much. I will be happy to email that evidence. My printer is non-functional.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you. Thank you both for coming. Is there anyone else who would like to come forward on these two issues? We thank you all for coming. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3717 and House Bill 3494. Committee members, we will see you tomorrow morning. And with that, we're going to close the Revenue Committee adjourn for today. Thank you very much. Thank you.